Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Brain podcast. As always, thank you for tuning in. And like as always as well, if you feel that this episode may help someone, please share that with them. Today's guest is Tanya Feiler, and she's a marketer, but she's also a bit of a fitness enthusiast as well. So she covers why exercise is quite important for her. But then she delves into areas of marketing as well and why it's not as simple as just doing a strategy and setting it up like that. So without further ado, enjoy.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Brain podcast. Tanya, why are you laughing?
Because of these, I keep catching sight of myself in these stupid headphones.
So me and Tanya had a bit of a mare before the whole, well, we've been here for about 15 minutes now trying to sort out microphones, and we thought it was my microphone and I was ending the meeting, pulling out microphones from everywhere, and then we actually realised it was Tanya.
Yeah, my speakers have gone completely kaput.
So now she looks like a professional gamer that plays Minecraft. She's got a lovely, big, nice, warm earmuffs that I don't know how old are they, you said?
Oh, God, these have got to be 23, 24 years old.
Essentially,
that's old Bose ones.
The cable's so long that this is the sort of headphone you used to attach to a CD player or a Walkman in your pocket.
That's exactly what it is. I think it was my dad's hi-fi headset. Yeah.
So we could sit on the sofa while listening to bloody, yeah. Oh, perfect. So Tanya works in the marketing industry. She obviously works sort of like with small businesses, like quite in-depth coaching as well. I'm sort of working in a small group environment with her at the moment. And she's sort of stepping into this, I know she's going to hate this term, of sort of life coaching as well, because she does delve deep into the mindset of how people behave. What got you into that area of your job? Your professional work?
Basically, it was, I was finding through just my normal marketing work, mentorship, that the struggles people had weren't actually marketing struggles or technical struggles. It was helping people release their mental blocks, get them past self-confidence issues, the imposter syndrome stuff. But sometimes it's a little bit deeper than that and goes back to beliefs you have about the world and about yourself from childhood. And you carry that baggage and that belief about yourself all the way through adulthood. And it stops you making decisions. Sometimes it helps you make the right decisions, but a lot of the time it holds you back because you've got this belief system that's been ingrained in you. And it's really prevalent when you hear people say, oh, I'm just not good at maths, or I'm no good at accounts. Or they say things like, oh, I should be doing that, or I think that's what I'm supposed to do. Stuff that holds people back. So I got into mindset, behavior, just reading books and finding out more about it through my own personal journey as well. I'm like big into personal development. I can't remember who said it, but there's a famous saying of develop the human, develop the business. So I've just always been into self-development. And then I enrolled on an NLP course a year and a half ago to actually find out a little bit more about the mind and brain and how it harbors these belief patterns and where they stem from. I qualified as an NLP practitioner last year. I've got my master's exams in January and February, NLP master's, but then I'm going to be moving into CBT, so which goes just that little bit further and is more like a therapeutic approach. Fascinates me.
Yeah, that is quite mad, like, because when we're first thinking you're into marketing and then now you're delving into that realm. Is that something you will work with people, like say from the CBT side, is that something you will work with them from a marketing point of view and to sort of help them overcome their fears that they're creating themselves? Is that how you will work for that? That's quite interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting spin on being working in marketing in my eyes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I work with business owners, so people that are the face of a business, regardless of what industry they're in. I work one-on-one with people that are in positions of power within their business or within someone else's business. And when it comes to marketing, it's putting yourself out there in front of the world. And the thing that stops that happening generally is your thoughts, fears, beliefs, anxieties around yourself. It's not around the actual business. Like, that's stuff you can just figure out along the way. Like, there are ways to find out how to do stuff. There are videos, there are resources, there are qualifications you can do to progress through the actual business stuff. I hate doing that, by the way. I don't know why I just did that.
No one can see, don't worry.
But they're the things that stop people from showing up as themselves. So marketing is about showing up as your brand, showing up as the business owner. It's about promoting the people behind the business. You can't market a business on social media without a visual representation. And the words, it all comes from a human. So developing that human and helping them access parts of themselves that are they believe are flawed and help them see that they can actually reach full potential. It's just, yeah, I think it goes hand in hand with marketing.
Do you think that, you know, like people that say they have these fears of certain things, do you think that comes from mainly that they actually care about what other people think?
Yeah, when people say, oh, I don't care what anybody else thinks, that's
that means that they care. In my eyes, that says that they actually do.
It's a lie, because there is always someone in your world whose opinion matters, always. Whether that's your mum or your dog or your brother or your partner or your colleagues, you care about what other people think of you. Think of you, think of your business, how you show up. We care. We care about people's opinions, regardless of how we dress it up. Like, there are lots of people's opinions I don't care about, but I want people to see and feel that I'm showing up as the best version of me. I don't want people to think that I'm unprofessional. I don't want people to think that I'm unqualified. I don't want people to think that I'm incompetent. They're terrible things for people to think of a business owner. So anybody that doesn't recognize that and says, oh, I don't care what people think, generally they're the ones that care too much.
That's quite an interesting spin, the way you said that. Actually, it does make sense. It's like, if you say something to someone, they say, oh yeah, I don't really care about that, or like you've said something to them and they're like, not offensive, but say you're having a laugh and a joke and they go, oh, I don't care about that. Actually, it's usually the opposite to it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that Shakespeare line, the lady doth protest too much.
Never heard of that.
Look it up.
How have you delved into, because we were obviously talking before the call about like over 50% of your business is, say, in the fitness space. But before we go into that, how has fitness been for you? Because obviously we're talking about how important it was for you in school and stuff like that. So can we go into that?
Yeah, of course. So I was always into sport or taking part in team sport. I'm an outdoorsy person. I've been raised to run around a lot, ride bikes, throw balls, burn off energy. So even in primary school, I played rounders, I played netball. Not like to any amazing level of skill, but purely because I loved it. I liked being part of a team. I liked having that connection. And through high school, it was exactly the same. Played rounders, played netball, played badminton really badly. But I loved it because it gave me a chance to burn off energy and be around people that loved the same kind of things as me. When I was doing it, that's not what I thought. I was just in the moment and enjoying it. But when I look back, I can see that that's why I loved it so much. Then when I became a teenager, things changed slightly, and my fitness and my sport stuff became clubbing and raving, dancing and enjoying myself, burning energy off that way. Then when I had my children, particularly my son, it was the whole, right, now I weigh too much, still got some baby fat. How do I get back to feeling and looking like myself again? So I joined my local gym and did the usual group exercise classes with a bunch of other new mums, everything from Zumba. I hold my hands up. Yes, I did Zumba. Bloody loved it as well.
Moving is moving.
Yeah. I was terrible at Zumba. I have learned, like, throughout every iteration of fitness that I do, coordination is not my strong point. Well, I am coordinated, but if there's other people doing the same thing as me, I can't, it throws me off.
Yeah.
I have to do my own thing. So Zumba was terrible, but I loved it. And from there, it was kind of group exercise classes just became not enough for me. Mm. And there was a PT in my local gym, and he said, I think you would do really well lifting some weight. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, and that standard was, response.
Yeah, that was 9 years ago. Yeah, 9 years ago. And I've done weight training. I've done CrossFit. I've done Olympic lifting, bodybuilding. And now I just do a little bit of everything. But it just keeps me sane. It helps me burn off excess energy. I'm quite an energetic person.
If you look at I'm not going to call you a dog, by the way. You look at, let's just, like, if you look at a dog like mine, Basil, he acts a certain way if he doesn't get two solid walks all day. He's humpy. I don't think that's you. He's growly. Do you know what I mean? He's you know, and I do feel like humans, we are meant to do that as well. As in, you think the way we are now hasn't evolved much from hundreds of years ago, where the way we evolve is we evolve things around us, don't we? You know, oh, humans can't fly, let's make a plane. And I think, you know, like, I do think this is one of these things where I'm always trying to have the battle of, you know, trying not to pick apart exercise and actually get people moving. I don't care what anyone does. If they want to go and do whatever and it might not be the best thing for them, they're moving. And that's the best thing that I think as a fitness industry we actually miss out on. It's like, no, you're doing that wrong. So it's like, you're telling someone who does nothing that that's wrong, and actually what they're doing is something, which is better than nothing. And you've always felt like that then, like, quite an, like, do you know, if you're not doing enough exercise, can you feel that? Are you quite an agitated person? Like, oh, I need to, is it like a release for you, I suppose?
My body tells me if I've not moved enough, especially now that I'm 45, if I've been sat at my desk for, which happens quite regularly, I have to sit at my desk and, you know, work for long periods of time. If I've not moved enough, I literally seize up from the feet up. But it's more an internal feeling I get. I feel caged, I feel pressure, and I feel overwhelmed with life. And as a, like, parent of four kids from 5 to 20 years old, I know that if they're playing up, or if they're grumpy, or if they're being shits, if I get them outside and get them moving in some way, just gets rid of all of that negative energy. It's really difficult to be grumpy and miserable when you're moving. With purpose.
You haven't got time to think about the grumpy and miserable stuff, have you? Because your mind's distracted. Essentially, the way I look at training, lifting weight, whatever you do, whatever thing you like, it's an act of being selfish, but the good context of selfish, isn't it, for you? That's essentially what that is. And I don't think, in, I suppose we see it all the time, whereas people don't take that time for themselves now, do they? You know, I imagine you've got successful clients that are really busy, like, say, entrepreneurial people, and they never give themselves 2 seconds breathe. I have it with clients, whereas, like, the one or two hours they spend with me a week is like their only downtime. But I'm inducing stress. But it's a time where they come in from being the boss person telling people what to do when they come in and they see 32-year-old me and they're double my age and I'm telling them what to do. And it's like, I just wish more people would sort of, I suppose, not view training like that, because it's not always, there's so much more to it than that, but it's that act of being selfish, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially in this busy world and busy lifestyle that we lead. People are almost martyrs to themselves. Like, they are pushing constantly to be better, whether that's business or being a parent. As a mum, I see it with lots of friends who are parents, mums and dads. They are always on the clock when you're a parent. Like, you don't get time to switch off being a parent. And taking your kids out for the day is great and it's fun. It's not always relaxing. And it's definitely not me time or downtime because the level of focus you need. But you want your kids to have a great time. So you're like involved. Mm. But people just don't switch off. Like, some of the guys that I work with, they come to me, they're coaches. Like, they know about rest, or they technically know about rest, recovery, recuperation, and minimizing stress. But they don't always afford themselves the same level of respect and reminding people that, you know, it's essential for you to have time off. I don't care about the hustle grind lifestyle. Yeah, as a business owner, especially a new business owner, you have to push and push and push. But you have limitations. Your body has limitations. Your mental health has limitations. Your tolerance, your moods, your family and friends have limitations. You are not a nice person to be around when you're massively stressed.
Mm. Yeah, because you're just snappy, and it's usually the people around you that get lacy the brunt of it, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so getting back to the fitness industry, how has that been from, so I imagine you didn't start in that area when it came to the whole marketing stuff. How did you fall into working with, dare I say, fit pros?
that's such a nonsense term, isn't it? But
yeah.
So it was because of the first PT that I had, really. He was struggling with his marketing. That's what I did. Social media marketing. Had my own business for 13 years. I worked predominantly with local business owners when I first started in a range of industries. But, you know, marketing principles are the same. It doesn't matter what industry it is. Mm-hmm. So I started working with him. Then it was kind of like combining passion with something I was good at, something I loved. This is the Ikigai that we speak about. Something I love, something I'm good at, something that the world needs, and something that pays me. Just really enjoyed the work with him. So I was like, right, let's see if I can find some more personal trainers outside of the area that I can work with. I just threw myself into the fitness industry as an observer and very, very quickly found that the marketing aspect within the fitness industry was like really lacking in ethical, basic marketing principles. It kind of went from there, really. I just made myself really well known in specific circles, and it just went from there.
When you say from the ethical point of view, what do you mean by that? Sorry, I just need to let the bloody dog out of the room. Walking across Basil. The room with my bloody long microphone lead. It's about as long as your bloody headphone lead, to be fair.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, sorry.
Ethical. So focused on marketing and communicating in a way that is helpful and valid and valuable, more based on marketing for the good of your client and customer rather than marketing for the good of the industry. Or how can I describe it? A lot of the marketing that I was seeing around that time was basically a pissing contest. It was all ego driven. There was a lot of marketing for other coaches or ego driven stuff rather than, and a lot of, there is still a lot of infighting and arguments about one method is better than another, keto diets are crap and all this stuff. And basically my mission still is to get people to stop doing that and actually market their good message to people who might buy from them, rather than focusing so much on like the dick measuring stuff.
Yeah, I remember, is it Gary Vaynerchuk was saying about, I don't know if he's always that positive and stuff like that, but he said something about, he goes, with what his business is, he goes, I don't really care about other people's buildings. I want to make mine the biggest. But he doesn't, and what he means by that, he's like, he's not tarnishing other brands. He's saying, he's just making his the best. And I always found that with, you know, like the personal trainers who used to bash Joe Wicks, and it's like, where's your fucking recipe book? How many people are you helping?
Yeah.
Like, you're so focused on this dude that you forget, you know, you're not seeing the bigger picture. Like, this guy's got people moving in his front room who don't even like exercise, and you're bashing him. He's doing a fucking better job than you, mate.
Yeah.
So, and it's yeah. And that's what year was that when you sort of started noticing, well, you say you came into the marketing of the fitness realm?
I would say probably around 2011, 2012.
Wow. God, I wasn't even a PT then.
But it's still something that's prevalent.
Because I
see so much in my own industry. So I socialize in peer groups, and I have worked with other industries. I still work with other industries. The level of dick measuring that goes on within PT, sport, health, fitness, you don't see that replicated in many other industries, not to the level it is in the fitness industry.
It's a very unique industry, isn't it? The fitness industry. It's so, dare I say, unqualified, because you've gone now you would have seen this from the start, whereas I haven't. Well, I'm starting to see it. It's like, now every personal trainer is a mentor.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's actually a professional's job. Like,
yeah.
What do you know? And yeah, it's quite a, it's, and it's the a thing very is, weird the, place.
The true definition of a mentor is someone that doesn't get paid for it. So a mentor is someone that guides people along the right path that they've already traveled. Like, a true mentor doesn't get paid or shouldn't be paid. It's somebody within your field, normally within your own company as well. It's just people see, quite rightly, they see a gap in the market. They think they're qualified. Some of them really are. But the fitness industry, as much as I'm bashing it here, I love it, because PTs, coaches, gym owners, everybody's driven by the same vision and purpose of improving people's health.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'd rather everybody was more Joe Wicks and focused on helping people rather than bashing somebody who's doing something different. I mean, we need to call out misinformation, absolutely, but I don't think that it matters really what the coach down the road is telling his clients, as much as what you tell your clients. People are so focused on like the wider sphere instead of influencing and impacting their own little world.
I think it's funny, isn't it, because you do need those people, those certain individuals, those key people in the industry to do that, because they do sometimes help create awareness about like these skinny teas and stuff like that, those really unethical companies that literally aren't trying to make the world a better place, are they? You do need certain people with high profiles to call that stuff out. But then some of the other stuff, it's like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't need that.
But even that, to some extent, like with my mindset head on, the companies that provide these skinny teas or make these skinny teas and promote them or other fat loss products, their intention is to make lots of money, but their intention isn't to hurt people or to make people ill. They are coming from a place of, well, this might be a success because people need it, people want it. So it's kind of, I like to believe that everybody is acting with the best of intentions at all times, because that makes my world a much nicer place to live in. And until someone shows me otherwise, I'll have that belief about them.
Great point, actually. I'm glad you picked that up. It's like they actually genuinely probably think they're doing good by creating this product that there's money in it. There always will be. But it, unfortunately, those people, I suppose they just lack maybe the information that's behind
it's that ignorance.
To a degree.
Ignorance. It's coming from a place of ignorance. And you can't blame, we have made the title influencer happen as consumers. We have made that happen. So you can't blame people who have an influence being approached by a company that says, you can sell this to your followers and make X amount of thousands of pounds each month just by doing two posts for us. If you are an influencer who probably has no real chance of having an actual paying employed role, you're going to go, well, I need to make my mortgage payments for the next 3 months, so I'll take that. And they're not doing it because they go, oh, this is a shit product and I know it's going to make people ill and probably doesn't work. They don't think that deep. They just go, I can make money off of that. It's the same with the teeth whitening stuff. All of those things happen because we as consumers allow it to.
Again, it's the consumers, the lack of information, isn't it, before they buy the product. What's your favourite part of the fitness industry?
My favourite part of the fitness industry is also the part that gives me the most grief. It's how connected and supportive and interested you all are in absolutely every facet of health, wellness. One thing that really surprised me and still surprises me is how intellectual and, what's the right word, intelligent and smart people are in the fitness industry. Everybody has this impression of they're just literally biceps or abs or a nice tushy. But there are so many.
Tushy's a bum, by the way.
Yeah. Tushy. But so many are so qualified. Like, they're the smartest people, the most well-read, the most, they think critically way more than most people, or they purport to think critically, but they practice so much of the stuff that they read up on, sometimes a little bit too much, like the evidence-based kind of stuff is very rigid and set. But it is, it surprised me just how, like, some of the smartest people I know are just online coaches. And people, the general public, just see this, I don't know, egotistical, arrogant bicep.
Love themselves,
Yeah.
And actually, it's not like that. There is a lot more behind it.
There is a lot of depth in the fitness industry.
What could you change about the fitness industry if you could, if you had the opportunity?
The qualifications, the level of qualifications. I see it all the time. People want personal trainer to be a protected title. I don't think that that will make much difference, but I do think that if there were stricter regulations around what qualifications are needed, and possibly gym owners making sure that the people employed in their facilities are actually qualified.
Do you think that goes on a lot then? Like, as in, I know in the online realm it will. I can imagine that because, I'm in shape. I was going to start coaching people online, and that sometimes takes off. But do you think that actually happens in person? I don't know if that would.
Loads.
Wow. Maybe I don't really follow many people, so I'm quite, I suppose I'm in my own little bubble when it comes to that, because I just get pissed off too much by seeing certain things. So.
Yeah, well, I know of at least four people in my local area in the past possibly even now still were working as personal trainers in gyms, but weren't actually qualified.
Wow, that's dangerous.
And exactly.
What's your next fitness endeavours now? Because I know that you're ticking over from a maintenance point of view, but is there anything more? Are you going to challenge yourself? Am I going to have to challenge you? What's going on?
So my objective, should I say, I don't really have a goal at the moment, but my objective at the moment is to transition from somebody that trained religiously 4 or 5 times a week in one modality, like bodybuilding, weight training. As I'm getting older, perimenopausal, I'm also getting busier. I'm trying to transition into stuff that is keeping me strong and active, but not punishing my body or trying to prove a point, shall we say. It's a respectful kind of privileged position of I get to move my body. I can put it through those levels of punishment. I mean, I did CrossFit, for God's sake. But now it's a case of how can I make fitness part of my life without it becoming too much of a priority, but also honouring and keeping it. Because, I mean, having a body that works really well at 45 is a privilege. So how do I maintain that without losing sight of everything else that's important to me?
Are you your biggest competition?
Yeah, I don't go into the gym and think that person lives more than me. I don't look at social media and go, well, she's got bigger glutes than me, or she shouldn't be able to lift that, I'm bigger than her. I go into the gym and go, I need to be fitter than I was 6 months ago. Or the last time I was here, I managed to do 8 reps on that RDL, so I'm going to push for 9.
Perfect.
It's very much because it's important that social media has actually allowed me to see how comparative the world really is, but how negative and detrimental that is to our self-belief and our self-esteem when you're in constant comparison mode. So the only person that you can actually truly have a like-for-like comparison with is yourself.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you'll have someone who's, say, not massively into the gym, but they love following gym stuff and they've got maybe a desire for it, and they actually get put off because they're following, say, powerlifters or bodybuilders or CrossFitters. And it's like, look, my heart doesn't have to be your heart, and that's it. You know, I get kicks and thrills out of doing stupid things when it comes to the gym. That doesn't mean you have to do that. Do you know what I mean? And that's I do hope that people, when they sort of see these things, they go, oh, that's not me. But that's tough. You know, you've got the whole saying of comparison is the thief of joy. That's true. But then that's if you let it become that as well, isn't it? Like you are absolutely following that person.
Yeah. There's too many variables for me to compare myself to anyone else in any other facet of my life. Way too many variables. And as somebody that I like data and I like authentic, honest, true representation of everything. I can't compare myself to anybody because, well, they're not 45, or they don't do the same job that I do, or they're taller than me, or they have genetically better quads than I do. So how can I compare myself? But it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I go to the gym sometimes and I'm like, fucking hell, like, she's amazing. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. No, she's 22.
Yeah, 22. Did different sports. So I'm glad that you've brought this up, actually, for the listeners out there to understand that, like, people, there's a genetic element, people's background. You know, did that girl or boy used to sprint when they was younger, because they're going to carry more muscle mass to a degree because of that. You know, they're going to have a bigger butt, you know, and that's just something that, if you're listening, please understand that when you're on Instagram or wherever, whoever you're following, and you're like, oh, I want to look like that, please understand that is something that's just unattainable. And
yeah,
think about yourself and how you can get the best version of yourself, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
With the NLP stuff, because I'm always interested in that. I had a client, my Nina, she'd done the course and actually started coaching it as well. How has that helped you with working with individuals from the marketing point of view of obviously getting the best out of them?
It allows me to cut through bullshit straight away. I can pick up through language, through phrases, through an understanding of what people tell you.
Wow.
The perception that they have, I can recognize when that's not necessarily evidential. So, and then helping them recognize their limitations and their limiting decisions. Everybody has limiting self-beliefs to some degree. They're really difficult to get rid of because, you know, it's something that we hold from very early age, 6, 7 years old. These things start to become part of who we are. And every time that's affirmed with, it can just be a phrase from a teacher, or it can be, on a first date, someone says something that just affirms that self-belief on a subconscious level. But it helps me recognize where limiting decisions, limiting beliefs are held. And when you hold up a mirror to somebody and say, for example, if someone says, I should be able to create this many posts each week, and you just say to them, should, why, where has that should come from? Who's told you you should? Where does the belief come from that you should do that? And it's kind of like this non-entity of, and it's our own perspective. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves because of the shoulds and woulds of the world. But helping people see that and kind of holding a mirror up to their inner belief and helping them pinpoint where it started and moving them through that. It's transformative for some people. For some, it's a long kind of, it just gradually eases itself out like a knot in a muscle. But sometimes it's quite an instant aha kind of thing.
Is that something that, because I, knowing the way you are, you know, a stick's a stick with you. do you have, when you're working with these people and they're face to face or however it's done, do you have to be mindful the way that you address that? Or can you just go, I don't think that's correct? Or do you, because I know that, yeah, again, it's an individual approach, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on the person that I'm working with. Another benefit of NLP is understanding, but also through like communication classes I've done, it's listening to the words and phrases, but reading people's body language. Some people are open to more direct approach, whereas others it needs to be a realization. But I don't, one thing that I am really strict on, and it's taken me quite a while to get the hang of it, is I don't lead conversations around these elements. I ask questions. I ask the right questions, and I've learned which questions to ask that get them to the answers that they need.
God, I don't know if I can be myself around you anymore.
And this is the other thing, when people realize that, like, I do mindset stuff or I've done NLP or I study CBT, they're like, are you analyzing me? And I'm like, I've been analyzing people since I could speak. That's just, I'm a naturally curious, inquisitive person. I enjoy talking and listening to people, always have done. I think that's why I was always that person who, when I was on a train coming back from London after work, I would have all of the oddbods and weirdos would literally gravitate towards me, or people would just start talking to me. And I'd be like, why? Yeah. I've just got one of those faces. But I think it's just the energy that people project. I'm interested.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with being curious, and that's part of your job, isn't it, to obviously maintain like a level of emotional intelligence, which I think that's massive, especially when you're in this, say, coaching realm, to be able to pick through certain things with certain people and delve deeper into actually why they're making those decisions. Why do you think you should do that? That's actually quite a key thing, because I guarantee you can flip it on them and go, and they go, oh, actually, you're right, Tanya. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But it's parenting. Parenting is exactly the same. Like
you're a coach, aren't you, when you're a parent, essentially.
You guide your children to make the best decisions, but you can tell them what to do till you're blue in the face and they won't do it. But if you guide them and you give them the tools that they need to find the answers out, and asking the right questions, it's definitely, but I've not like naturally fallen into this. It's been a slog, and I've made a lot of cock ups on the way. Like my two older children, they were experiments. And my two stepchildren, the 5 and 7 year olds, I'm doing a way better job this time around.
But
it's like you do, like, and I think people are so scared to make mistakes. Like they're scared to make monumental mistakes. But having made a couple of monumental mistakes in my life, I can say through those monumental mistakes came massive learnings and teachings and some real positive experiences. And would I do it again? Yes, I would.
Yeah, so it's part of who you are now, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Some of the shittiest things that happen in life actually teach you the biggest lessons if you stick through it and you push through stuff. Like you can't, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, I think it was Dan Osman actually, about resilience. Like you can't just learn resilience.
No.
It's not something you're born with. It's something that you develop through adversity. You develop it because you're going through something that's tough in some way. And it's like, I guess it's like leveling up. Like every time you go through something hard, your level of what you can go through goes up a little.
Yeah, I call it reference points in life.
Yeah.
So say you do like, let's just do it with running, right? Say you do a 5 mile run. You're like, yeah, that was okay. Then you do a 10 mile run. And then let's say you went to do the 5 mile again. You're like, well, I've done the 10 miles. And it's that level of, hopefully that makes sense. But yeah, it's a reference point in life of, oh, actually, this isn't that tough because I've done something that is potentially tougher.
Yeah.
And it's like a stepping stone of constantly going up, isn't it?
Hopefully. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, physical stuff is a really good way to build not just physical resilience, but mental resilience as well, because there is nothing as terrifying as having to come out of the bottom of a really heavy squat. Like that is mindset as well as a physical resilience. But the first time that you do that and realize you've not like fallen over, dropped the weight or shit yourself, you're like, excellent. Well, that's the weight ticked off. I can probably attempt that again with less anxiety around it.
Yeah, it is literally just, yeah, again, it's that exposure, isn't it? Graded exposure to certain elements is a key part of resilience. But I do think it's something that gets used out of term quite a lot, resilience. It's like, oh, this is, that person's resilient because they done, you know, like people would say Ross Edgley's very resilient, as he is, but there's so many other things that he's good at. Guess what he's very good at? Preparing for the event. Preparation. He knows that that's going to be the key thing to get him to swim around the bloody country.
Yeah.
Is his preparation. There's other elements of it. Yeah. Like, and his mindset. But yeah, I do think resilience sometimes just gets chucked around like out of context. And actually there's like loads of other things. This guy has self-belief. He's confident in what he can do, you know, like that. If you prepare for anything, you'll be able to achieve it, essentially, won't you?
Yeah. Was it physical preparedness?
Yeah, that's something I believe in over resilience, personally, for me. That's just something I've always done. Like, if you prepare for the job, you will pass. If you don't...
Exactly. But resilience, I think, is an emotional and mental skill. It's nothing to do with your physicality.
Yeah, it's like who's the key for that person? It's like David Goggins, isn't it? Even though it's a bit blown out of the water.
I don't really. I've not really read or listened to anything around David Goggins. because everybody else has done so, I'm a bit of a maverick and go, if everyone else thinks he's great, I'm going to go the exact opposite and not listen to him at all.
So there's great things about him, but he's one of those people that doesn't show his vulnerabilities as well. So I always think that's a strong point in person. So is he a perfectionist that potentially has low self-esteem?
So people that have got this mental toughness but can't show vulnerability tells me that they don't have mental toughness.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Because you can't. If you're not prepared to show your weakness or perceived weakness, your softer side, your doubt, anxiety and fears, if you're not prepared to show up as wholeheartedly you're not mentally tough. You are skilled in putting on a brave face.
That makes sense, because you don't maybe show those emotions because you care what other people think, which stops you from being mentally tough.
Yeah, and if showing emotion stops you from progressing forward with an endeavor, you need to work on that skill massively.
Right, if you're listening, David Goggins, fucking listen to Tanya, right, mate?
I can only say this because I used to be that person.
Really?
Who would, people still say to me now, you are so tough, like you're a ball breaker, and I'm like, meh.
You don't know me that well. You definitely do carry a presence about you, I'll say that, like as in, like when we do our Zooms, or if you are definitely the certain a person who would come in a room, no matter who's in that room, if you needed to say something, you're not going to be the person that's like, oh, do I ask this question? You would happily go, no, this is what I think, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean? You definitely do carry that presence.
Self-assured.
Yeah.
Yeah, self-assured. But I'm also equally able to show my vulnerabilities. I've learned how to do that through adversity and resilience. And being a parent, being able to show every emotion and be able to show that I can navigate those emotions, not always great, but I try to navigate those emotions in front of my kids, shows them that they can do the same. Whereas if I'm always holding back and just putting on a brave face and staying strong and not showing other emotions, it just teaches them to do
the same. To hide theirs. Yeah, and it's just like a pressure cooker, isn't it, over time then?
And you can't connect with people on a proper level if they're holding that back. I struggle with people that are so self-controlled with their emotions. I find that freaky.
Yeah, I don't really know anyone like that, thank God. Stern.
Yeah, because we all have breaking point, right? And if you can show that you have that breaking point, like I hollered at my daughter this morning because she was late getting ready for school. So I shouted at her, come on, get yourself up, get ready. We need to get out of the door. Otherwise, you're going to miss your bus. She's like, don't shout at me. Don't shout at me. And I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. I should have shouted. But it frustrates me when you don't do what you're meant to do in the morning. And we all then struggle to catch up throughout the day. It frustrates me. So I shouted and I apologize.
That's because, like, you know, if you did that, it pisses you off. So it's sort of that whole thing. It's you, isn't it? It's a reflection of you.
Yeah.
You know that you probably don't like being late for stuff. So it's you doing that onto them, isn't it? Interesting thing.
Exactly that. And it is always like, I can't remember who it was. There's a parenting blog that I follow, but it's like, why do you react? Where does the anger come from? Where does the fear come from? And it is, people are going to think that I'm a bad parent if she is late for school. I'm not doing my job as a parent if she's late for school. And that's why I get frustrated, because it's a reflection on me as a parent rather than her being late for school.
Yeah.
But recognizing that and going, oh, shit.
Be late, it's fine.
It's taken some work. But saying to her this morning, like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have shouted at you. But I love that she challenges me and she feels confident and self-assured enough to go, oh, hang on a minute, Mum. No. But she does it with her teachers as well. So I've raised a daughter.
That's you, that is.
I mean, she doesn't always do it with good grace or manners. Like, she's still learning this stuff. She cocks up a lot. But giving her that platform for if you believe something isn't true or you believe something is wrong, question it. So she does. Mm-hmm.
Good.
She's just got to learn the niceties around it.
Yeah, but, no, that's good because you're creating curiosity, which is something I think in kids that's so, you know, like, so many people out there are like, oh, I wish my kid was normal, but like, fuck normal. Why would you want, like, you
there's
want
no such thing as normal.
Yeah, what is that? Who sets the baseline for that? Who sets the standard of, oh, my kid's normal? No one.
Exactly.
Normal in your eyes. So before we wrap this up, now we're going to delve back into the fitness industry. As if there was some advice that you could give for personal trainers, what would it be?
Learn to communicate.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
Learn to communicate because it opens your eyes to wider perspectives. Communication isn't talking to people. Communication is listening, understanding, respecting, and connecting. Mm. And being able to hone those skills opens up the door for everything else.
Mm. And if people wanted to get, say, personal trainers or any, I suppose, any business, because that's actually who you work with, I imagine, any business. Where would it be best to get in contact with you? And are you running sort of any courses or anything at the moment that you could just plug?
So Instagram,
yeah.
Facebook, just put my name into the search bars, you'll find me. We will be doing another round of Nick and Tanya 12-week group coaching in mm-hmm. January of next year. I am going to run in December, I think, a free challenge, a five-day okay. challenge for anybody that's interested in. It will be about making an impact, showing up as yourself, not necessarily marketing, but helping people see the social media platforms as opportunities for connection rather than probably what they're using them for already. But just embracing social media for what it really is in those 5 days. I'm not quite sure what it's going to look like yet.
What would you say social media really is?
It's where you make friends, isn't it?
Yeah.
Literally, that's what it is. You use social media to connect with people. It's finding out information. But it never used to be. When these channels first started, Facebook was a way to connect uni students, college students with other uni college students. And then it was to connect you with old school friends and then family who lived abroad. So it was built on connection. Twitter, exactly the same.
Wow.
YouTube, you find out how to do things from people that are already doing things. Social media is literally, it says in the name, social media. It's for places to be social. So you just go and make friends. That's what I did. And I kind of built a very successful business off the back of it.
That's quite a cool way. So I personally didn't think that would be the answer. I don't know what I was waiting for, like bullet points of, oh, it could be this, it could be that, but actually it's just like, nah, make friends, bruv. It's true though. When you look at it like that, yeah. It's definitely
And that's how you make a sale, isn't it? That's how you build your business, is you make friends with the people you want to do business with and then you ask them to pay.
Essentially, was it people buy people, not products, isn't it? Essentially. Yeah. Most people that reach out for coaching of any form are bought into you.
Yeah,
not the whatever
people the buy process. Yeah, people buy solutions, people buy what's the right phraseology, there's like we don't buy necessarily what we need all the time, like our needs are very very basic. So it's desires and we buy those things because of a problem we're trying to solve within ourselves. But we buy those solutions from the people that we resonate with the most, that we trust to help us solve that problem. And if you're not presenting yourself as that, oh, look, I've done this. I know how to get you through it. I've got this thing that can help you. You're going to lose. If you're not showing yourself as a mate, if you like, you're losing sales left, right and centre if you're only showing up as a business.
That's interesting to view that. Yeah, that's definitely gave me something to think about. Because I suppose I try and look, yeah, when I look at my the way I try and do, like, it's just, it's not, I just want business because I don't really generate much business, say, from social media. I use it as like a place that can give me business, but more than not, I'm trying to help people. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it's a like something I should do because
it's a platform service.
I can. Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
oh, I could teach someone that. And so just
let it's it go. An extension. It's an extension of the service that you provide.
There you go. That's
and you what just happen to have made friends along the way.
Yeah. Right, Tanya. Thank you for your time, even though, get your fucking microphone sorted.
I know. Right. I will. I'm going to unplug the whole thing and reset it up. It's like, I can't work with these things on my ears all day.
I know. Absolutely sweating one out because your ears are bloody.
This is why I don't wear earphones. Like, I don't even like the in-ear ones. I like freedom.
Oh, God. Well, it's a lesson learned anyway. So... And at least I know that my nice Rode mic works.
It does. My earphones are shite.
Right. Anyway, Tanya, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.